My name is Gary Butterfield, he, him.
My name is Kay Ross, she, her.
And you're listening to Watch Out for Fireballs Dispatch, our monthly Q&A topics listener response episode.
And announcing what we're going to be covering in March.
Yeah. Mousy, smarch, waff. Yeah, we'll just get right into it here.
Yeah. We open up with a comment here. Nolan says, "Hey, Gary and Kay, before you read my comment, I really think we should wait until Jonathan gets here."
Yeah, that was just for you.
Yeah, that was just for me.
Yeah. Little K treat. There's no comment.
There's no comment there, really. We're just waiting until Jonathan gets here. We'll get back to Nolan when Jonathan gets here.
Well, given that, you know, this is, it's kind of existential. Jonathan doesn't exist, so there doesn't have to be a comment.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like a Guffman kind of thing.
Yeah.
Videogames.afghanistan says, one quick lightning round for K. Was K your anonymous name?
No, it wasn't that. Okay. That would have been really funny.
That'd be great.
As a repressor, but yeah, no, it wasn't that.
just a real bringing it back. And then question for the group. I want to weaponize narrative as mechanic, and I was thinking, what if you could only gain XP in an RPG by skipping cutscenes and NPC conversations? You could listen to some for partial XP and maybe get a magic stopwatch that lets you rewind time a few times. Not a question, but yeah. I think that is a cool idea. That's a funny idea for like an indie game.
Yeah. Just like you can either know what's going on, or you can do well at this game. Pick one.
Yeah. Making you choose like between mechanical power and narrative satisfaction. That is a very like 2014 art game.
Yeah.
Like kind of idea, but it would be one that there'd be like an absolutely banger Errant Signal video on. Mm-hmm. And it would be really interested in.
Yeah. Call it, I don't want to hear the end of any sentences.
Yeah. Yeah. Perfect.
Chimera Dragon writes, "Hi, short time listener, first time caller. In 2018, you had high praise of the game Pathologic, though you said you should never play it, and I was wondering if you had any thoughts about Pathologic 3. A friend and I are playing it, and so far it seems to fix many people's issues about how hostile the game is while maintaining the tension and story that it's praised for, i.e., it has a sprint button. The war is over. Of course, neither of us has finished it because, despite only being the bachelor route, me and my friend have some full-time jobs, and it literally came out on the 9th, so I'm just wondering if either of you have dipped your toes in, so to speak."
I have not.
Yeah, I have. Are you familiar with, like, what the kind of, like, logline is for Pathologic 3?
Not really. I know about the semi-remake nature of Pathologic 2.
Yeah.
And I knew it was coming out.
Yes.
But my news blackout gives me, you know, blackouts all over.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of stuff like that. I just found out it's coming out, though. I've read no commentary.
Mm-hmm. So I streamed this just one session just to see because, I don't know, I love Pathologic. It's really weird. I don't know that it's bad, but it is incredibly different than Pathologic 1 or 2. Like, there are no real, like, survival elements. So you're not scrounging for water and food as much. What you're
like trading
doing
bullets
is,
to orphans
yeah,
for cookies.
Yeah. You're still doing trades, but you're doing it for drugs because the meter that you are taking care of is a balance between the bachelor, between Daniel's apathy and mania.
Okay.
So like different things that you do will either like depress you or drive you crazy. And you are trying to keep it in the middle. Even though being closer to one end or the other gives you different mechanical benefits.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Additionally, like one of the major things that it does that will, I think, make this a little bit more approachable, though more confusing, is that it works time travel into it. So, like, the framing device is that Daniel is back in the Capitol being interrogated about why he failed to, you know, stop the infection. So there's part of like a storytelling element to it, where you're like jumping forward and it's like, you know, oh, you escaped. You tried to escape on the fourth day, and that's why you ended up in prison. I say, no, I didn't. But you play the result of that, and then you go back and you can kind of change it, and you can go to clocks to like try and undo stuff if somebody gets killed or if you fuck up the story, kind of thing. So like, it is kind of made so you can see more of it, in addition to having more mechanics around like diagnosis and treating people as well, down to like a little bit of a like adventure game puzzle kind of element where you have to like look at them and then decide like what is the most likely thing that is wrong with them in order to give them the right cure that's not going to kill them. It's neat.
Interesting. I'm at some point we'll do Pathologic 2 for the show, I'm sure. I'm not quite as driven by Pathologic as you are, but you know, a general well-wisher.
In the
series. Sounds interesting. I liked the narrative twist at the end of the first one a whole lot, but I'm a little bit less set on fire by the mechanics of it.
So curious. The answer, Chimera Dragon, is yes. Yes, I have tried it.
Naveen says, oh no! The local community center needs $10,000 to stay open and keep the town's youth from a life of crime. Luckily, there's an arcade in town hosting a game tournament, with the first prize being that very amount. What game would give you the best shot to win to save those poor, poor children?
Probably Guitar Hero.
Okay, that is, it feels like a cheat, but you're right. Like, in that environment, that'd be the only way you could play it, because if you're actually in a, you know, an arcade, it's way too fucking loud.
Yeah.
You'd have to have it be, like, the only machine on. Or, like, wear headphones. But, yeah, that would, it's just Guitar Hero with a heavier, worse guitar.
Yep. And all, like, every single one of those, the straps is broken now, so you have to hold it up while you're strumming.
Yeah. I guess that would be part of the challenge. I don't know what arcade game I'm best at. When I was in practice, when we've done arcade episodes, like, I could get pretty far in Mappy, and like, I got you know, things like that I could do, but I'm no longer in practice. That kind of stuff. A lot of that's memorization that I no longer have.
Yeah. But you could get it back. You learned it once, so you can do it again.
Yeah. And I would for the town center, I suppose. The town, you know, the arcade. But it would be, so it might be my best.
Yeah. Just the Guitar Hero is the only thing that I'm like confident at. There are arcade games that I enjoy, but I never play for score, right? Well,
and they're also, you know, predatory by design.
Yep.
You know, so it's you can be good at them, especially the old ones, but it is, it's difficult. There's like an era where you could play for score, and though they're predatory, while they're predatory by design, you can still kind of, they're like more fair than like beat 'em up kind of stuff that happens, you know, a little bit later, like the Golden Age or fighting games.
Yeah. I have no idea how you would do a beat 'em up tournament.
There's probably people on YouTube who have ways to do it. You know, there's like no damage runs on those kind of things, but that's beyond my ken.
Dan writes, for Gary or Kay, do you use Linux at all for your desktops or laptops? If not, how do you plan to escape the Windows 11 and shitification vortex?
Yeah, I don't. In my brain, I am a very much devil, you know, person. I will adjust to things I don't like more than I will seek to change them a lot of the time if they are a part of my life that I don't care about that much. So I'm probably just gonna be the frog in the water and get boiled with it. It's what I'm doing with iOS. New iOS update fucking sucks shit. You had to press twice as many buttons to switch tabs in the browser. Why? What fucking good was that even in a million years? Like, The edges are beveled now. I hate it so much. I hate tech. I hate it. So I guess this would be a good, if somebody would come set this up and make it so it looked exactly like how it is now, but never changed, I'd be in hog heaven. I need to like tap Nick for that.
Yeah, Nick would be the person to tap for that most assuredly. It's one of those things where like, oh, do you use Linux at all for your desktops or laptops? I would not, like, so I understand the benefits of it, and there are distros that work really well, and with SteamOS being ascendant, like more games and stuff will just run on it, which is good. But like the idea of just running Linux, like I would have to have a different laptop that ran Linux. Additionally, I'm not running into the Windows 11 and shitification stuff because I only use my Windows computer for playing games and for streaming. Hmm. Right? Like sometimes I do a little bit of video editing on there occasionally, but like that is if my Mac Studio is busy doing something else. Most of my like time existing on a computer is in macOS. Which has its own shitification stuff going on, but nowhere near as bad as what Microsoft is doing with Copilot, right?
Yeah. The Copilot stuff for me has been fairly easy to ignore.
Yeah.
I use a thing called like Windows Shell or something that makes current Windows look like old Windows.
Ooh.
And it kind of gets around a lot of the stuff. Basically, I just needed the old start menu.
Mm-hmm.
There's still things that pop up, like if you click on a random part of your monitor, instead of it like takes every tab you have open and then arranges them in like a mosaic.
Okay.
And I don't want that. Like,
No, I like a list.
Yeah. I really need computers to stop trying to anticipate what I want.
Mm-hmm.
I have dominion over you. You are a machine.
Yeah.
Like I'm a man. I'm a human. I've got, you know, cognizance. I've sentient. You're not like, good God, what did we give up? What did they do to us? I hate it so much.
What I have done is I have switched to Vivaldi as my browser.
Okay.
Yeah, just to get away from Chrome. Because like there are three browsers. There is Safari, there is Edge, and then different kinds of Chrome.
Yeah.
And Vivaldi is a way around that. So
imagine using Edge.
Yeah.
Like use the Edge browser to convert PDFs because it's free.
Yeah. Yeah.
As a thing. And every single time I do it, I'm like, you sure you don't want to just hang out? I'm like, no.
Hey, so what's going on? What's going on after this, buddy?
Yeah. You looking to dance? Like, it just fucking leave me alone. I'm so mad at it. I wish I could kill technology. I would shut down data so fucking hard. I'm the guys from Starfleet who would just be like, no.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
I'm a person, you're not. Click.
Click.
Yeah. Kill the AI. Kill the Copilot.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of,
yeah.
Jordan M.I.M. says, with the recent discourse around Blueprints and Expedition 33, do you think AI disclosure in games should be treated more like a content warning, a credits detail, or a core part of how we evaluate authorship? And is there any acceptable point in which AI use is acceptable, i.e. drafting the placeholder stage? Personally, I don't want it anywhere near my creative works. Yeah, this is interesting. Yeah, we just talked about this recently. I think on the last dispatch,
because mm-hmm.
we talked about this. And like, I have a more nuanced opinion on this than just like, I will boycott all of it.
Mm-hmm.
I also don't want it there.
Yeah.
Like, just for the record, like, if it could disappear from the world, I'd be fine.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be happier than I am now.
Yeah.
Games are something I've been thinking about lately a lot is the degree to which collective kind of punishment happens with, for lack of a better word, moral consumption.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like not so much. It's not like, oh, you know, play the Harry Potter game because she's, you know, that actually directly supports. But like, yeah. You look at something like a video game company and the boss says, hey, I want you to use AI for a little bit. None of it ended up in the game.
Mm-hmm.
The people who are making the game and doing the creative work probably don't like that.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of going back to the idea that we hammer on a lot about games are not a monolithic creation from one person.
Yeah.
You know, looking at, you could boycott based on AI, any AI touching it at all. But it's the same thing with when we talked about Rockstar's labor issues. And then like the listener who sent us Red Dead Redemption 2, and it's like, I really like this game. I was really proud of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the person who actually did a lot of the stuff. So
yeah.
Not saying you just like all AI is cool, but I think you can draw a line. To me, there's mm-hmm. like degrees of involvement that make it worth boycotting, while also I wish it was a thing. I wish it was not a thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like so badly. I cannot control for the money men continually mm-hmm. pushing for people to do things like that. And that seems like the way the wind is blowing, and I don't want to give up video games.
Yeah.
I guess.
Right. I don't want to give up video games. I also think that the pressure should remain on, you know? Like,
yeah.
Like
we complain about it, but like, it's not like the pressure can remain on. But again, who is getting, I guess, like one person just being able to sink a thing, like literally mm-hmm. sink it.
Yeah.
You know, making a stink about it is great. Maybe they'll mm-hmm. back off about it.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. No, yeah. So like for me personally, like I would prefer it be like a content, like a disclosure kind of thing. Like, Steam has the right idea on this, whereas fucking Tim Sweeney does not. Yeah. Right. Like, that is just bad. I personally, if I can avoid it, absolutely don't want to play something that has it in the end product, right? Like that Satan Santa game that we did for Epic Suffering, right? Like I refunded that so quickly after we played that and covered it. So like for me personally, I'm going to steer clear of as much of it as I possibly can and generally be supportive of the stink being raised to stop it from being included, not because of environmental concerns. Those are real, but like primarily from like a labor concern. Yeah.
It's real bad behavior. Like it sucks mm-hmm. as a thing. Yeah. I guess maybe I am feeling less illusioned with our power to change anything because of world state shit. Mm-hmm. Like it really, and also I just came back from San Francisco, which is like just AI as a city.
Yeah.
you know, as a thing. So it might just be a low morale point for me. Mm-hmm. But part of me is like, I don't fucking know. And also the government's shooting people in the face right now. It's hard for me to think this is, I understand you can have multiple fires, but like mm-hmm. World War III is taking up a lot of my concern.
Yeah.
Right now. I don't know.
Claire Obscure having some AI in it. Like, I don't even know the specifics of it, but like, that's not going to stop me from playing it, I guess, eventually when I get the time, like if it comes to us for WoF or whatever.
Yeah. Same thing. Next summer's JRPG. Wow. 2027 JRPG of the month of summer. Sure.
Yeah. So that's not going to stop me from that. Just like, I don't know, I bought The Alters when it was on sale because I like the Frostpunk team and that game looks rad as hell, right?
Yeah.
That had an AI placeholder texture that got through to the end game. There was a stink raised about it. I'm sure it hurt their sales. They got the message, right? And they took it out. So like, all right, I feel fine ethically for this. You know, I think that it is important to understand when something is collective action versus personal action and what the interplay between those two is, right?
I think so too. And I also think that like part of it, this is also just an old canard of mine, but part of me feeling like this is just going to land on the everyone draws their own line mm-hmm. Continuum that a lot of things do is being sick of the cycle of every time it comes out that a game used a thing kind of regardless of to what degree.
Yeah.
It just explodes. Like, and the stink at the actual company being like, hey, I'm unsatisfied with this. Mm-hmm. Into it. I'm getting sick of the discourse around it, I guess.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think there's new things to say about it.
About personal culpability if you decided to play it, right? Like, I think that is something like, I was kind of interested in checking out Arc Raiders because I have never played an extraction shooter. And I was like, oh, if that goes on sale, I want to give it a shot. But like finding out about the AI voice stuff in it or whatever, I was like, ah, I don't feel like that. But also if somebody is playing it, like I don't hold them to account, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. Everyone draws their own line.
Yeah.
Like, you can draw your own line. Whatever your line is good. Mm-hmm. Other people can draw a line and you can think, you know what? You don't have to have perfect moral match with everybody, you know? Mm-hmm. It's a government shooting people in the face.
Yeah.
I don't know. That cannot just be a cause all for everything, but it is, you know.
Yeah. And it is also like you're thinking about like, oh, I'm paying taxes for that. I paid for that bullet.
I paid for that shot. Yeah. Like it's, again, I understand that there's not a like, because there's bigger problems, you can't worry about smaller problems. Mm-hmm. And like, it is a relief to worry about smaller problems. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that's part of the reason why this generates the discourse it does.
Yeah.
Is because this feels comparatively it's like something that we can have power over.
Yeah.
But
And you also because anything with AI abuts against surveillance technology stuff and general labor kind of things, it does feel righteous because it technically is part of the, it is part of the same story. So like people deciding this is where I'm going to put my fight. Like I can see how somebody gets there.
Yeah, it is righteous. It does not bypass the posting is not praxis.
Yeah.
Discourse is not praxis. You're not doing anything.
Yeah.
You know, you're just making each other miserable about a thing.
But yeah, keep it as a content disclaimer. And moreover than that, companies that don't use AI should fucking trumpet it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I do want to fucking know. If it gets laundered into my game, I'm going to be pissed. You know, if I notice something, I'm like, that's fucking AI. Like, I'm going to feel bad. Tell me. You know, and also just stop doing it. God, I wish that would happen because it keeps being proven not to actually like save shit. It's not good.
It works
badly and it's evil and it's ugly. Like it does nothing good.
It makes workers less efficient.
like it's fucking crazy. I hate this world where it doesn't matter if everyone hates something. Like just, you know, everything can be remarkably unpopular. Nobody likes it. It's bad for everybody. We're still doing it because,
we're sleepwalking. We're still doing it because just the world is sleepwalking.
We're sleepwalking, and there's a few, like not a few, like there's many, but like there's some real shitheads.
Yeah,
you know, there's some low quality humans.
James writes, hello from a very cold and icy London. Kay, I'm not sure where you'll be in your moving journey by the time this episode lands, but I'd love to hear about how it's gone, what the challenges have been, and what you're most excited about. And to both of you, will Kay's move result in any format changes on the shows? Either way, I'm incredibly happy for you, Kay. Onwards and upwards.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I had to push my moving date back by 3 weeks. And even that is going to be a little bit of a struggle. Kind of as a result of like, I joke about how I keep everything, et cetera, et cetera. But like the longer that you are in a place, the more nested you get. And like, because I have been in Ohio and like, you know, if you're moving from Cincinnati to where I live, there's not much of like a concern about the weight or the space on the truck kind of deal. Like I never really have had to, you know, get rid of stuff, right? So this is kind of becoming like a little bit of a filter and something that I'm running into. And part of this is just being human, but another part of it is genuine executive function disorders, is just having a bunch of kibble everywhere. Are you familiar with that term? It's really useful.
Yeah. It sounded like you said kibble, and I was thinking about you eating, you know, like the Futurama human cereal. They made a bachelor chow for bachelorettes.
Yeah.
Like, how does that work? Is it kibble or kibble?
Kibble. Okay. It's from Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep? It's like a Philip K. Dick term that is like just a term for like all of the rubble and shit that just accumulates around a place where people are, where nobody's committed to the maintenance of it.
Okay. You know?
So like I've got a bunch of just like small shit that has ended up on a surface for a very long time. And then in a fit of executive function, I'm like, okay, I'm going to clear this surface off. And I put all that stuff into a tote, and then the tote lands somewhere, and then I don't touch it again. And so I have like a lot of undifferentiated small shit that I'm like going through, because to move it would be unsensible, but there's valuable stuff in there too. So I can't just like throw it away. Right. Yeah. So like I've got a plan. Like I'm working through it. It's fine. But like, there's a lot of just undifferentiated stuff that has just landed in places that I've never really had to, you know, deal with because I never had to sort it out. Right.
Yeah. I think that like when you buy a house, ideally you're buying a coffin.
Yeah.
You know, you're buying a tomb. Like you just like, I know part of the reason why you get a house is so you don't have to get rid of stuff.
Yeah.
And move, you know, again. Not, I support this move. I think it's a good idea.
Yeah.
I've been supporting it for years. So there's not any blame in that, but it's really natural, I think, to just accumulate a bunch of stuff.
Yeah. You know, you don't have to be like a sentimental basket case about it. Like I am. Like,
it just happens.
So I've been in this house for 7, coming up on 7.5 years now. And that's plenty of time to for stuff to work its way into the cracks and be difficult to get out. I think ultimately it's going to be good for me, not just the moving, but also the process of, you know, going through and severing purging. Some attachments. Yeah, that's ultimately going to be pretty good. And there's going to be like another purge that happens on the other end as I try and find places for things in my new apartment. Yeah, that's roughly where I'm at. Moving dates coming up towards the beginning of February, and I've got like a route planned across the country, which is neat. And we're gonna see how it goes.
Right? A family truckster.
Yeah,
the family roadster.
A family truckster. Yeah,
the route planning software that I always wanted to play.
Yeah, with Pac-Man. Yeah.
Yeah. Good movie. It's a. Every time I've ever done a major purge, for every time I've thought like, oh, I used to have that, I can't believe I got rid of that, I feel an immense weight off of my shoulders. Like I do stuff around now. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it feels really good. I think you'll feel really good.
Yeah,
having done it, doing it is hard. I think you'll feel really good though.
Yeah, like right now doing it alongside work shit is driving me up a fucking wall. But
well, it's a full time job.
Yeah.
You know, stuff will probably get a little interrupted in unscheduled stuff, you know, and kind of moving on to the second thing. We did a whole announcement about how the future of the network might change in general and also because of this move. And in the short term, we asked for people's grace because moving across country is hard.
Yes. Yeah. Trying to minimize that. But there's going to be a little bit of an interrupt. February is going to be a weird month.
Yeah. And that's okay. Like, hopefully, you know, probably not for this show, probably some of the ancillary, some of the D-listers, you know, just kidding.
I did have to build in a week break on real itch hours and best quality vacuum. So,
and that's okay. Like the people understand, we appreciate people understanding, but I think we cultivated a pretty understanding audience.
Yeah.
And like, if you're going to understand something, it's a good thing to understand.
Yeah.
Exotic Minivan says, life question. We're starting the process of looking for a house to buy. Do you have any tips or anything you wish you knew when you were doing it? I'm excited, but also terrified. Excited and terrified is good.
Yep. That's is correct. The right. Those are the two emotions you should be feeling.
Yeah. Get more input than you think.
Yeah.
Like in terms of things like the home inspector will come and they will tell you the things they cannot look at. Get people to look at those things.
Yeah.
Even if it's like a couple $100, if there are trees on the property, get an arborist.
Yeah.
Just have them look at it. It won't be expensive for them just to do like a little consult and take a look at it. You want to know all of that shit.
Yeah.
As best you can.
Yes. If there is a basement, understand that you have bought basically a very temperamental toddler that can bring your house down if you ignore problems with it.
Yeah, basements are. But also, I would say like don't. It's very easy when you first do it to realize all the things that can happen. You have to kind of adjust your concept of time.
Yeah,
you know, a little bit. Like there's things in our house that. And we will have to fix eventually that for like a while, for like a good year, the fact that it had to happen eventually is making me think the fact that it's not happening now we're going to die and the house is going to fall down and shit. Like that's just my brain in part, but like realize like, no, it's okay to actually like, you have to do triage. You know, you have to take care of those problems in the basement. You can't let them sit. There are things that are more urgent and things that are less urgent.
Yeah.
And if you just treat them as all the exact same weight, you will go crazy.
Yeah. You have to think about the problems with the house like on a different time scale than problems with a lot of other things in your life. Consequently, also like anything that you need to do or have done with it will take longer than you would preferably enjoy it too. Right.
Yeah, well, kind of depending. I've had really good luck with that.
Yeah.
No major remodels, but in terms of, you know, the stuff that we've had done, you know, we've had pretty good luck with.
Yeah.
I don't do a lot of DIY stuff. I'm not good at things. You know, I'm not handy. And I have health issues that make, you know, kind of continuous stuff like that hard. There's also a lot of this depends on what city you're in.
Yeah.
Here's something I'll throw out. And, you know, officially don't take advice from podcasters in case you know, there's any liability. I don't think there is for this. Mm-hmm. But like a lot of minor shit, I've gotten a lot of use out of like a handyman for things that are beyond my DIY capabilities, but are, I don't want the minimum charge for a plumber or electrician.
Yeah.
I use TaskRabbit, the ethics of which, according to the TaskRabbits themselves, seem okay. They set their prices. They get their money that they get. And I've had a really good experience with it.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to do this thing with wiring because wiring kind of freaks me out. I'm going to give this guy $50.
Yeah.
And he's going to come do it. And he's real nice. We chat for a little bit and I find out what bands he's into. And then like he goes home.
Nice.
That's been really nice. And that's like, available to you in a city. I don't think that's probably as hard, easy to find in like a small town.
Yeah. If you're looking for a person to do something, there is that. Additionally, like if you don't even know where to start, if you have like a local hardware store, not like a Home Depot or even like an Ace Hardware, but like a mom and pop kind of place, like what I have found in all of those that I've gone into, like they will have a section on the wall of business cards where local trade professionals will just like put their cards and you can ask the person behind the counter. You can ask either Ma or Pa. Say like, hey, I need this ceiling drywall fixed. Do you know who might be able to take care of that? And like, I found that they have two or three options and they know roughly who is booked up and not.
That two or three options is really important. Get multiple quotes if it's a big project. That's expected. You're not doing anything. You're not wasting anyone's time. That's one of the only things Nextdoor is good for is finding people to do shit like this. Like the people advertise all their landscaping and roofing and all of that stuff on Nextdoor and you can like talk to them and see reviews and shit like that. It's not just for saying somebody saw a black person.
Yeah.
What do we do?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
Good luck.
It is a long and daunting process, but you're gonna be rewarded at the end with a roof over your head and a place to store equity.
So hopefully you're buying a tomb. Best case scenario, you buy a tomb.
Moving on to media questions, we have Billiam, who writes, I'm starting to hate the term mystery box as a criticism to gloss over stories that are speculative and pose scenarios that an audience wants to have answers for, but that don't really need an answer, such as Severance, The Chair Company, or pick your fave postmodern nightmare story. I enjoy impossible situations not because they can be solved, but because I want to see characters deal with the impossible. For example, would the metamorphosis be better if we found out Gregor had found a +2 amulet of cockroach shape? What pop terms of art criticism have you grown weary of and why? And do you think that those reveal anything strange about culture?
No, that's a good question.
Yeah,
I don't have not seen mystery box as a term, but that does sound annoying and in line with just people's urge to solve shit.
It's a way people described Lost was the first time that I heard that. And it's like retroactively applied to like Twin Peaks, stuff like that. Yeah. Yeah. So you know roughly the genre of show that it applies to. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's irritating to feel like you have to solve everything or for people to do that.
Yeah. I have an answer for this. It relates to some of the stuff that we talked about before with AI. I think that the semantic drift on the word slop is not helpful.
Yeah. It is just kind of being used as thing. It is not helpful.
Yeah,
as a thing at all.
When I saw certain video games that have a defined end referred to as campaign slop. I was like, we need to figure this out, guys.
It's weirdly useful though for something like that is too broad, but I do feel like parry slop is useful. I feel like there's 1,000 games where you're just a samurai and they all play basically like Neo a little bit. Like a Neo Wukong, and you're just parrying. Like that feels like parry slop to me.
Yeah.
But it's like I know it when I see it.
Yeah.
You know, I like it. It would have been fine if it just stayed for AI as a thing. Makes sense. And I think that there's some kind of slop, but I have been really guilty of semantically drifting this. Like, Liv will go and make breakfast and I'll be like, hey, you know, you're going to look at your phone. Do you mind if I watch some Gary Slop on YouTube? And that can mean anything.
Yeah.
Like,
that's also just a funny thing to say.
Yeah. We're doing it to goof around, but I am contributing to the problem.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think it is helpful. It is decreasing the vocabulary.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that is a good answer for that. I don't know if I have a specific one I can think of right off the top of the bat. Slop was what I was going to bring up as well.
Okay. Yeah. So we're on the same page there.
Yeah. Wish semantic drift did not happen as much.
Yeah.
Holland says, not so much a question as a shout out, but I was wondering if either of you have experience with the Verma series by the artist Plastibu. There's a link. It's a series of game guides for a fake D&D/Souls-like game. I enjoy the artwork and the prose, and I feel like it would be up your alleys.
I love Vermis.
Yeah, I've got the first one. Do not have the rest of them. I know there's a second and third one. I really like it. It's on my Taskmaster to get them at some point. I've just been trying to be more intentional with my purchases.
Yes. Kind of sane. Like, there's so much stuff on that HoloPress website that is like, just I could just like hit select all and get. But yeah, Vermis is great. It feels like somebody making a thing just for me.
Yeah. It's super cool. The way I encountered that was really cool. Mm-hmm. The best independent comic store in Portland is called Floating World Comics, and they have a discount section. Mm-hmm. And because it's an independent comic store, they have a bunch of weird shit there. And I saw it there and just picked up. I was like, oh, this is weird. Like, I have no idea what this is. I didn't know it was a real game or wasn't a real game. Mm-hmm. I had never heard of it. And I bought it for like half price there and then like researched online.
Sweet. That is perfect. That's like the ideal use case. Yeah.
It didn't, you know, apparently it didn't sell well enough in stores, which is a bummer.
Yeah.
You know, so it ended up there, but it was really cool to find it there. And then like Riff got into it. Riff had heard about it as well.
Mm-hmm.
Vermis is sick.
Yeah. Floating World Comics is sick. It's in the Lloyd Center Mall too, which is having that's a little renaissance. This is all of the local Portland stuff you're going
to
get now.
I hope everyone's looking forward to us talking about the Lloyd Center Mall. There's all these, you know, that it may not exist for much longer. It might get torn down. They're going to make a music venue. But it's also a weird thing where, like, the papers are reported it's going to be torn down. But you know, that tabletop store we went to with that real nice lady, if you remember, me and Liv went in there to kind of say goodbye to it. And we asked her, and she's like, yeah, no, we're on the lease until March. They haven't told us anything, and they have to.
Oh,
so I don't actually know what's going on with Lloyd Center Mall.
Hmm.
Lloyd Center Mall used to just be a mall ass mall, was a dead mall for a long time. And now they've started renting out a bunch of the places really cheap. So you get weird shit in there.
Yeah.
It's one of my favorite places in town. It's real cool. There are like museum pieces, like little local art galleries. There's a pinball museum in there.
Mm-hmm.
We mentioned Floating World moved into there, you know, for cheap rent basically, but like, who cares? Good on them.
Yeah.
You know, there's a synthesizer museum. Like, there's a lot of cool shit in there.
That cool little tabletop store is called Dice Pool.
Yeah.
I wanted to give that a shout out
to Dice Pool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really nice. Like a little hole in the wall. Really quaint and good, and has a good selection of obscure shit.
And the owner gave you a donut that one time we went in.
Yeah. Can a bitch get a donut? Yes. They're just really, really nice people. They also do, God, this is just buzz marketing, but they do a monthly solo RPG, like book club, that I have thought about joining before because I wanted to get more into solo RPGs, and I don't have time for it. Just doing cool shit, like really neat. Portland is killing it with independent game stores right now. There's a place called Common Grounds over by in the Hollywood district. It's really nice. Yeah. Doing good work.
Yeah. Kara writes, Gary, I recently downloaded Philippe Pepe's CRPG book and saw you wrote a section on alter ego. What was being involved in that project like?
Yeah. I saw a call for that. This would have been in the early 2010s. Right before or shortly after my divorce. And because that book was in the hopper for a very long time, I saw a call for submissions on it, probably either on the Something Awful board or like randomly, you know, like I don't know. That was the website I was on that would have had that kind of thing. So maybe there, and just wrote, you know, hey, I'd be interested in doing this. It was an open call. And I listed a bunch of games that I was interested in, but those are all taken. So then there was a big list of games that still needed somebody to write up a thing.
Yeah.
So I chose Alter Ego, the one that I had the most experience with. And then didn't hear anything for a very long time.
Yeah.
very, very long time. And then the book came out. I don't think I got a free copy of it, which I was supposed to. I'm not, calling out Philippe. It's just, I think that, I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know
what
happened. There was a huge disconnect. I was happy to pay for it because I love that publishing company.
Yeah, yeah. It's a great book.
Yeah. It's a great book. All of their books are really good. The the JRPG one is really great. The shooter, the beat 'em up, like they're all really good.
Yeah.
I love a gaming reference book.
Yeah. Yeah. Same.
Yeah. And it's real neat. Fleep is a cool follow on Blue Sky. Talks a lot about undersung countries, like video game cultures. Like apparently there is a really, really huge kind of body of Chinese RPGs that get like no attention that are apparently interesting and good. But because we have decided there's just W and J for RPGs, like they're ignored.
Yeah.
It's kind of, it's like a one person kind of campaign against that. So interesting stuff.
Yeah. That's a good fight to fight.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. Like they don't seem like games I would like, but I love the idea of anything that breaks out of the, you know, Gaia Whitey shoot good / Shonen Jumper. Moving on to show questions. Eric says, good God, were you aware that they've made a movie based on the Szymanski game Iron Lung, and it's written and produced by Markiplier, and it stars just Markiplier, and oh God, various YouTubers as the cast? It appeared like a jump scare while I was looking at the Alamo Drafthouse release schedule, and it's a two-hour runtime based on a largely storyless premise. It's like being presented a non-Euclidean shape. So, March Unfilmable? I don't think its limited release can save you from this fucker. I like the aggression of that question. Yeah. Like, that is refreshing.
Yeah,
it's like a Guppy review.
Yeah, more of that energy.
Praying to God won't help.
Why are you looking away? Why are you looking away? It's everywhere. Yeah. I think that'd be more of an adaptation decay. I was aware of this, and I saw that and thought, huh, that seems like a weird fit, and then just didn't pay any more attention to it.
Same. The new information I'm getting from this is 2-hour runtime, which fucking freaks me out.
Yeah.
Like that is sucks. Like I was like, oh, this is, you know, maybe interesting. And Markiplier is one of those guys where, like, because he's popular, I have a knee-jerk reaction to him, but I don't think he's actually bad.
Right.
I don't think he's evil or anything. I think he's just like, you know, a YouTube Let's Player. Mm-hmm. Not my thing. So maybe it'd be good. You know, Szymanski worked with him on it. I trust Szymanski. Yeah. But 2-hour runtime is crazy.
Yeah. Like, I think that maybe 40 minutes would be pushing it on Iron Lung, honestly. Right?
A short film. That should play at the Lovecraft Film Festival.
Oh, 100%.
Like, in between, you know, features.
Yeah.
Like, it is crazy that it's 2 hours. That, I hate that.
Uh-oh. Yeah, that's a brown M&M right there.
Yeah. Yep. I'll be curious as to see what people think of it once people start seeing it.
Bert writes, hey there. Apologies if this has been asked before. I have a lot of nostalgia for the Super Nintendo, Donkey Kong Country games, and I was wondering if any of them would ever be considered for a WAF episode, either on your own or if it was sponsored. I feel the sentiment on those games has largely turned negative over the years and was just wondering where you stand on them. Then I say some nice stuff. Good news.
Thank you for nice things. Yeah, we're doing one. That sentiment come like on the show has always been that guy, I don't like how they look.
Yeah.
I don't like the pre-rendered SNES style very much.
Mm-hmm. I feel like the play is too floaty based on my recollection, you know?
Yeah. But like we're going to give them their day in court, basically.
Yeah.
So yeah, somebody got it for you.
Yeah. Nice to hear.
Yeah, it's and I'm looking forward to it. Like I will talk about, like, it's a huge series we haven't talked about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I feel like due diligence, we have to do it.
Yeah.
Skylar asks, I know future plans are always malleable, but I've really enjoyed seeing Real Lich Hours turn to a CRPG-focused show. With Divinity being in the news a bunch recently, have you thought about doing a deeper dive on Divinity Original Sin 2 for a future season? Or Divinity Original Sin 1? Curious what goes into thoughts planning for picking new seasons of shows. That is reminding me of a horrible thing we're going to have coming up, which is that there's no universe in which we don't cover Divinity. It's going to be hard to do that as a WRPG for the month after doing Baldur's Gate and kind of like knowing how deep those can get mechanically. Yeah. But also it wouldn't work for Real Lich Hours because I think the remit of Real Lich Hours is based on source material we can also bring in.
Yeah. Yeah. That is a nightmare scenario. I think that it might actually, like, it might just have to be like, this is a strange mini season of Real Witch Hours.
Yeah. Where, like 10 episodes.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, in which we're not going to get too deep into the lore. Like there's some back matter there, but it's harder to look into.
Yeah.
You know, the same way that we do on Real Witch Hours, but like, again, like, terrifying to think about doing that in two episodes at an RPG and then having the premium, you know?
No.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It looks sick. Yeah. So that's what we do right now. And then in terms of long-term plans, we don't have long-term plans. We know what we're doing next, but after that, I don't know.
Yeah.
We have to figure it out. Like, they're long seasons. We're not out of the opening area of Torment yet.
Yeah.
So.
So, in a couple of months, we'll probably have a good idea of what we're doing after Planescape. But
We talked about it. I mean,
have we?
Yeah. We talked about it. I'll tell you off air in case you're not down for it.
Yeah. No. I'm sure I'll be fine. I'm like, oh yeah, that's a good idea. It's like, it's a good idea because we had it. Yeah.
Yeah. We're talking about do the Shadowrun, the harebrained scheme Shadowrun trilogy.
Yeah. There we go.
Like, we cover those for WoF, but we're going to do them slower and do the back matter and do the first one and dig into Shadowrun back matter, which is incredible.
Yeah. Okay. That's what I remember. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then after that, who knows? A lot of people have asked us to do Warhammer. I'm interested in Warhammer, but I don't know anything about it. So I don't have the nostalgia thing, which is tricky.
Yes.
You know, I'd really like to play Rogue Trader. If I play it first and get really ensconced by the lore stuff, it'd be an easier sell.
Yes.
Yeah.
Moving on to lightning round here, we have KL who writes, what are your preferred Mario Kart characters?
Yeah, I am a Peach main for Mario Kart. I have a Peach Mario Kart keychain as such. I just like the way she controls, and I like in the Super Nintendo sprite, she has big sideburns. And as a kid, I always joked about the Carl Straczynski baseball card with the big sideburns or whatever. And I always thought that was kind of fun. Yeah. So, Peach main.
Yeah. It depends on the game. Like, for early ones, I like heavy characters. So, like, I've done Bowser for, like, SNES and N64. When you get to... I don't have opinions on Double Dash because I never really played that one too much. You get to newer ones, I prefer the way lighter characters kind of feel. So, like, I tend to do either Birdo or Shy Guy now.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I always prefer motorcycles.
Oh, God,
For me. Yeah. I think they control better and they feel better. Excuse me. Dylan asks, what's something you're excited for this year, big or small, video games or not video games?
I'm excited for this fucking move to be over.
Yeah. That is a cop-out answer, though.
It is a cop-out answer. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm excited. Second answer, I'm excited for Resident Evil Requiem. I've not seen anything. It's coming out, like, basically tomorrow.
Yeah.
I'm very curious about where it goes.
Me too. I'm curious as to what happens with that. I know we'll cover it. You know, so I'm not going to play it right when it comes out. Probably play this October.
Like, yeah.
I don't know. It seems even odds. Like, that'll be an October game for WoF. Mm-hmm. I'm excited for that. Monster Train 2 DLC comes out in just a couple weeks.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to dominate me. It's going to pin me down and, you know, just ride me to fucking morning. Uh-huh. Very excited for that. New game mode, new clans. A bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
There's something else that's coming out. Oh, Mugenix. Edmund McMillan Tactics breeding sim. Mm-hmm. I'm really excited about that. That's supposed to be really good. It looks good.
Yeah.
And if it ends up being the kind of thing that takes a million hours for it, we've talked to Nick about maybe doing a WoF with Nick on it. I like it.
Oh, sweet. Yeah. I'm excited for that too because of the tactical play. Right?
Yeah. It looks cool. And it's also, it's like real detailed. It's like, it looks complicated. And him doing, you know, he's working on that forever. I remember my friend Levi gave me a Mugenix cup at like PAX in like 2011 or something like that. You know, and he's put out several games in the interim, but this one feels like this is the big game he's put out since then.
Yeah.
Since Isaac.
I'm also excited about the new Life is Strange. Getting Chloe and Max back together. Enjoy those games. So. I don't know. All of those are really soon. We'll see.
Yeah. Yeah. Other than that, what's coming later, I don't know.
Yeah.
Wolverine comes out this year.
Oh, does it? Yeah, that's going to be fun.
Yeah, that's going to be a prescription for fun. Like, it's you know, not going to be super deep, but I trust that developer to make something that just goes down so incredibly easy. Like, I'm going to play the shit out of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, would have been a great WoF with Jeremy, you know, if it was that, it worked out. So little sad note while I'm playing it, because we both talked about it a lot, but I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah. Luke writes, one of Ray Seahorn's earliest roles was a Magic the Gathering tutorial. Does it belong on Adaptation Decay, Abject Suffering, or Best Quality Vacuum?
It's a good question.
That's a very good question.
Have you seen that?
Yeah, no, you shared it with me shortly before we started Best Quality Vacuum.
Yeah.
It's magical.
It's pretty good. The I love working actors' early stuff.
Yeah.
I love a working actor.
Love Ray Seahorn.
Yeah, and she's great. It's very funny. Like early Ray Seahorn, it's like she was there in many things. I didn't notice her until Better Call Saul.
Yeah.
Yeah, good actress. Michelle asks, do you think there are more bad tattoos of Marvel shit, DC shit, Star Wars shit, or sports shit? The term is slop.
Thank you. that is sports shit in a walk. It's been around longer. It has such a so much wider of an appeal. Like just if you're asking about quantity, it is that. I am sure that if you are talking about things that are more shit, more bad, like just the stuff that'll like really peel paint off the walls, like, you know, I would say DC or Star Wars would be the ones. Hard
to, I feel like you could make an argument for any of them for things that would peel the paint off the walls. Like a big titty Iron Man, a big titty Yoda, and then like a big titty Mr. McPicklick. Like any of those could be really horrible. Like a big titty bizarro Superman fingering himself. Like there's a lot of stuff like that that I could imagine, and people will do anything on their fucking body. Tattoos are awful. Like, I mean, I love tattoos, but people get really bad ones. But I do agree with you on sports shit. The other aspect of the sports shit is there's a bunch of them that are just inherently racist now.
Yep.
Like you just got the Kansas City Chiefs on there and you're just like, well, fuck. Like,
oh no, Chief Wahoo.
Yeah, that's not going to age well. Yeah. So I think it's probably sports as well.
Yeah. Let's see here. Eric writes, worst Carolingian king and why? Go.
You got me. I don't know what it means. I don't know Carolingian. Success.
So there, like, this is like there are only two Carolingian kings. Like, if you look at the dynasty, like a lot of it is like the mayorship of Austrasia. So you have Charles Martel and Charlemagne, and I think that it just if you're looking at that, like Charlemagne has to be better. So by just default, Charles Martel has to lose on this. He did help quell the civil war in Francia, but Charlemagne expanded the borders so much. So,
yep. Go, like, sure.
You want me to talk about Pippin the Second? Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
No, the Revolutions podcast does not need to be reaired on our podcast as a cover version. Ian asks, it's the 10th anniversary of Beholderfest this year. No real question. Just wanted to point out this auspicious occasion.
10th anniversary of Beholderfest? 10th anniversary of the Summer of Come?
Yeah.
Oh, wait.
Yeah,
no. Summer of Come was last year. Sorry. Yeah.
Well, not last year. The year before Beholderfest. Or no, the 10th anniversary was last year.
Yeah. So 10th anniversary of the Summer of Come was last year. And then this is the 10th anniversary of Beholderfest. The first Beholderfest, because there were two.
Yeah. Yeah. I wish there was more Beholder stuff. Mm-hmm. I feel like we talked about Beholders a lot.
Yeah.
And they're not making new ones.
Nope.
You know, it'd be cool if they were.
Yeah. Agreed.
Yeah. I'm looking at my big Xanathar Beholder action figure. Mm-hmm. I rearranged my office and I got my little buddy down here admiring his fishbowl. It is nice. A fun big toy.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's move on to topic.
Let's. This will be you.
Mikey asks, I've been playing Kingdom Come Deliverance 2, and it got me thinking, does anyone like repairing and washing their gear every 20 minutes? Watching long flower picking and deer skinning animations, all your food and herbs spoiling. I have modded out a lot of these, and I'm actually enjoying the game now. I feel like a lot of these realistic, immersive mechanics actually just take me out of it and remind me that I'm playing a video game. What are your thoughts on these types of mechanics? Do they add or detract from the game?
So yeah, like any of these little, I'm going to call them like friction animations or friction systems.
Well, there, yeah, because there's part of this that's animations, but part of it is also like, yeah, this gets into like durability or mm-hmm. like, you know, timing, you know, things staying good for a time. Like
yeah.
Your food spoiling, shit like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it takes, like, those take me out of it because, like, when you're talking about the system, like washing your gear every 20 minutes, like, you don't do that in real life. That you'd be you'd be Filbert the Turtle from Rocko's Modern Life.
Yeah. it's not very sometimes, like, if you're going to do something just for verisimilitude, I think that it has to be also in service of like a gameplay aim.
Yeah.
Not necessarily fun. You know, like speaking, we were talking about Pathologic, that has things that are there for verisimilitude in order to make you feel desperation and sadness.
Yeah.
You know, it should be to a purpose.
Yes.
Through a thing.
See also the lockpicking animation in Thief 2, right?
Yeah. That is something that I imagine there's probably somebody who would really hate that and complain about it because it's not interactive and it takes time.
Mm-hmm.
But it is communicating with the other systems in the game in a way that's interesting. I feel like a lot of times these sort of things, Red Dead Redemption 2 is the like back of the box. You're like, you know, the poster boy for this kind of thing, but they're kind of there so they can be, you know, like, oh, we can do this. You know, let's lovingly render this thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it, I've heard from people who say that it works for them. Mm-hmm. Like it immerses them deeply in it. They just kind of go into slow mode. Like they go into like an easygoing mode when they're playing that game.
Mm-hmm.
To me, I just really need the systems to talk to each other. I'm never going to forget I'm playing a video game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I know I'm playing a video game. I know where I'm at. I have object permanence.
It's all going to be meters, right? Yeah. Like it can be presented to me with as much loving animation as you want, but like it's another meter to babysit.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that a part of this too is that like a lot of my I developed the antibodies for this from Indigo Prophecy, right? Mm. It was really neat. To, you know, when mopping up blood, like, oh, to do this, you've got to rotate the stick, right?
Mm-hmm.
And a bunch of games tried to do that for a while, including ones that we like, you know, spinning the mouse really fast for a Penumbra or Amnesia, right?
Yeah, we're turn playing a valve Indiana handle. Jones right now, and you have to, like, open doors and just locks actually to do it.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, my ooh, that's neat. You know, antibodies were developed 20 years ago now. So it's hard for me to it's hard for me to give a lot of slack if it feels like this is just trying to show off. I suppose. Yeah,
you can place a lot of that. This is just a whipping boy for me, but you can place a lot of that at the feet of Shenmue. Mm-hmm. I feel like, and when that came out and it was novel. Like I was not immune to the novelty either. Like opening a drawer, you know, petting a cat, like things like that are things that it was genuinely novel to do in a video game. When I think if I steel man it, the artistic aim for that is to give sense of place and to slow you down.
Yeah.
Like to make you relax as you're playing and not do things. The problem with that to me is like one, that isn't a relaxed game. Like the plot of that should have some urgency to it.
Yeah.
So it always feels uncanny. Same thing with Indigo Prophecy, where like you do just take some time to like jam out in your guitar and shit like that. I'm like, things are fucking afoot, man.
Yeah. The internet's coming to get you.
Yeah. You know, yeah. It's okay. You know, I know you have to have this date and everything, but like you're not Spider-Man. The story of this is not you balancing your personal life with the internet coming to kill you. There are so many games that are about like living a life.
Mm-hmm.
And being chill, that work of that better. Like when I actually want to be in that, there's really hard for me to want to do that in Shenmue as opposed to The Sims.
Yeah.
You know, to like create the little space and make my little guy move around it and not have this unrelated beat 'em up plot.
Yeah.
That's happening in there.
Also, like if it's the animation and even if it's like a system, like just doing it over and over again, seeing the same animation over and over
volume
again.
Matters so fucking much.
It does, yeah.
In this. Like, Dragon Age Inquisition, the game that is about bending over to pick up elf fruit.
Yeah.
Like, you can say it's about this messiah and all these things, but you spend a lot of time picking up Elfroot until you eventually can manage meters to send people to pick up Elfroot.
Uh-huh.
But the Elfroot must be picked up.
Yeah.
Like, there is no universe in which the messiah is not directly responsible for gathering this grass. And you will watch the animations for it. You will wait real life hours for your men to come get it. Like, it will be a tedium that it's just imposing on you. It's a meter, and it's constant.
Yeah.
You know, if there's a sometimes mechanic, it wouldn't be that big a deal.
It just it needs to be worked into dramatic situations in a game, I think, like anything like that. Like, instead of a durability meter, like, you know, maybe it is something like you know, like Far Cry, where it's not just that you have to kind of like keep this up. Sometimes your weapon will jam.
And you have to do something.
Yeah, and you have to do something in the thick of combat, right? Like, you know, it's not just, this sword's going to break. You should go get a new one. Maybe there's a point in the story or something, you know, that happens where like, oh, this weapon needs to be taken away, right?
Yeah.
Like, it feels like there are ways to do that that are not just a tedium simulator.
There's really cool things that can happen with it.
Yeah.
You know, in an ideal way, like I think about the weapon durability in the 3D Fallouts, which I don't think is great, you know, but I think about at its worst, it was not that bad. It was easy to get around. At its best, every once in a while, I'd have to use a weapon I wasn't used to because my weapon broke. And that's what they're going for that. It's at least to a purpose as opposed to an animation of me skinning a deer.
Yeah.
You know, so it just kind of like depends on if it is to a purpose and how often you do it. As a thing. Also animations, if something is repetitive enough, it can be really non-immersive in that it looks ludicrous.
Yeah.
Think about Horizon Zero Dawn and her doing that rappelling animation the exact same way every single time she does it. It has like little flourish. It's stock. It's stock to my ears. Like it just it does not work. Looks silly as shit. It looks like the game pauses to show me a little movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that's what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the long answer is it depends.
Yep. But I think we laid out like the pitfalls that are around it, right?
Some good
like,
use cases and some bad use cases.
Yeah. The answer to every question is it depends.
Yeah. But we did talk about it.
We did. Yeah. And that's the important thing.
Yeah. If we solved it, we wouldn't be here. We'd be on an island full of bikini babes. Let's move on to responses. We have your responses to Zelda, The Binding of Isaac, Thief 2, and RoboCop Rogue City. Kay, do you want to get started here with Abram?
Yes. Abram says, The Legend of Zelda was a formative media experience for me as a child. I played it when I was 5, and I was obsessed, not just because I wanted to play the NES game, but in how it flavored all of my play at the time. I vividly remember taking the flat green roof piece from my Lincoln Log set to brandish as a sword when I went out to explore the woods with other kids in daycare. My childhood and adolescence was split between video games, fantasy novels, and wandering the forests near my rural house. And the locus of this constellation of interests is The Legend of Zelda. Thank you, Miyamoto, for encouraging me to trespass on my neighbor's forested land, find ruined cars from the 50s, steal lost axes, and learn about vernal ponds and their fairy shrimp.
That's great.
So cool. Also, vernal ponds are great.
I did a lot of real similar stuff to that when I was in a trailer park kid, except it was cornfields.
Mm-hmm.
But we would also pretend to be Zeldas.
Yeah.
And as a kid, and even now, like anything with swords, I'm pretty into. I remember me and my trailer park friends getting this like from dollar store, like their mom had bought a set of these little plastic swords and they were short. They were like little daggers. But to me, I was like, oh, that's how long Link's sword is. So we would all kind of pretend to be these things. And there was three of us and we'd say like, who gets what Triforce?
Yeah.
You know, and you know, the Triforce of power, you get a sword, Triforce of wisdom, you have a magic, but nobody wanted the Triforce of courage because we couldn't figure out how to play, you know, with it. Like there wasn't any way to do it. So a lot of that stuff kind of lived only in our imagination, but like walking around cornfields with that little sword is a real treasured memory.
Yeah.
Of mine.
Yeah. Just the little kid, allure of being an adventurer, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. It's great. Yeah, and the game captures it great. Dylan says, my first playthrough of the first Zelda took place during what I can only call a fugue state brought on by a severe case of the flu. Over an approximately 9-hour nonstop play session, I beat the entire game with no previous knowledge except for playing the flute where fairies don't live to unlock that area's temple. I remember burning everything I could possibly see with a candle, then stumbling upon the 8th temple after seeing that lone bush in the way of the path and thinking, hey, that's not supposed to be there. In retrospect, while finding the 8th temple is often referenced as part of Zelda's crypticness, I think it's actually one of the game's best secrets in that it very strongly signals how much it stands out in the way that forests are supposed to be designed. I haven't played the second one yet, but boy, isn't it cool that we basically got 2 full games in 1 cartridge, or second quest yet. Yeah. Side note, I hope you guys do a Zelda 2 episode one day. Me too.
Same. Yeah.
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 Yeah. The idea of just like playing it in a flu fugue state, with like the specific ways in which, things don't behave as you expect in that game.
Yeah.
Feels very disorienting.
The response to this is good too, because I think it illustrates the way that Zelda is kind of on the, cusp of a good way to have cryptic bullshit and a bad way. Like that bush is really good. You can see it. It's out of place. The 4th bush from the right in a row of trees, that's bad cryptic bullshit. Mm-hmm. That's just, you have to burn every bush. You know, think about Wolfenstein 3D versus Heretic. When you come to that, like Heretic secret doors, a lot of them were signaled. Like there'd be weird shadows on the wall. Mm-hmm. Something like that. Like we have moved beyond Billen's secret castle, Tower of Draga. Like that's not good. Mm-hmm. It doesn't stand up now. And this game was moving us out of that.
Yeah.
In a way.
Importantly.
Yeah. Agreed. Yeah. We got a bunch of responses about Isaac.
Yes, we do. So Alex says, as part of a recent press tour for Mugenics, Edmund McMillan was on the Castle Super Beast podcast, where he said to the host and new parent, Wooly, who was also raised in a religious household, quote, "You're going to realize that maybe the trauma you experienced religiously wasn't 100% the cause of all your issues, and that maybe something you were born with may have not only been making you feel how you feel, but also your parents felt that way, which is why they ended up going this direction. I wonder if Edmund's time as a parent may have affected the new endings added to Repentance. I wouldn't know. I'm still working my way through Afterbirth content. 300 plus hours and 1 lost save. Love this game."
Yeah, that's interesting, because we talked about that on the episode. The endings have softened. The final ending that they reveal is kind of happy after previously they largely had kind of suggested very, you know, Isaac asphyxiated in a trunk.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the whole thing, right?
Yeah. And the, you know, there's still its ambiguity, you know, because all these endings exist, you know, but the final one, which, you know, he finds out the enemy is not his mother. It's the way that she's being manipulated by like televangelists and stuff.
You know,
quite literally, you fight the TV as a thing while televangelists play in the background in the soundtrack.
Oh, cool.
I do think there's like a softening and kind of that philosophy behind this.
Yeah.
Nice to see my boy grow.
Yeah. I mean, it has been working on the same game for, you know, 15 years.
Yeah. Yeah. It'd be weird if it didn't change at all.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good catch. Zane says, "The Binding of Isaac, or Guppy, which is now the name that snaps the grid first when I think about it, was the game I first downloaded Steam for and has been a perennial favorite ever since. Part of its longevity is due to the consistent updates and upgrades and just the sheer amount of game in there. But I also think it becomes a lot of people's forever game because it's appropriate to so many moods. You can play at your desk, you can play in bed, you can play it on the bus, you can play it one run a day, you can binge it during a monk marathon, you can speed run it or challenge run it, you can play the same seed with friends, you can watch a friend or streamer play it, you can play it as a way to release your nervous energy. You can play it when you're depressed. Oh God, you can play it so much when you're depressed. Please stop playing it so much when you're depressed. We're very worried about you." Boy, can you play this game when you're depressed.
Yeah.
I agree. Like this is, I never think about it, but this is, I always think about Final Fantasy Tactics and that would be up there, but this would also be a really good desert island game for me.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely. It goes down so fucking smooth for me. Mm-hmm. Like I will, if I have like a half hour to kill between things, like when we, on the days we are, this is boring. Then days we record Quackstack, we have a little break in between because we record that later for Gwen's schedule. I will usually fit in an Isaac run.
Oh,
while
nice.
I'm having lunch. And it's just like a little bit of like kind of getting my hands busy and my brain just a little bit busy for a time.
Yeah.
Like it's very relieving.
It's good to have something that fits in that slot. I do wish you could play that game while watching shows other than Monk.
Yeah, that's a. I don't like Monk, but yeah. I've seen all of it. Like, just, I'm not really into it. The premise seems it seems stock to my eyes.
Yeah.
The yeah. So.
Ben writes, I'm looking forward to trying to listen to the Binding of Isaac episode. I've bounced off of Guppy a few times, but for reasons unrelated to Gary and Will's hijinks.
Doubt.
I had been introduced to the game by a good friend who would heckle my inability to master the game, into which she had sunk hundreds of hours. She had so much of the game memorized, while I rarely managed to get past Mom's heart. It was only in hindsight that we realized that this was her capital D depression game in a very clinical sense. She was struggling with work and school, recently divorced, and was in the midst of a transition which was not well received by her birth family. She took her life in 2018, and I haven't been able to pick up the game since then. Every time I've tried, sometimes in a memorial effort, sometimes to try and recapture the fun, the themes of the game combined with my real-world memories to dampen any joy or sense of play. I don't know if this is the kind of message that you'd want to include in a response. I am assuming that there will be a lot for this game. But take this as your reminder from the universe to hold your important people close, remind them that they matter, and seek help when warning signs pop up.
Yeah. You know, very sorry for your loss. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know what to say about that. I understand, no. Like, there's no virtue in this. My relationship to media is not as associative.
Yes.
As that, like, I don't, you know, I can still watch stuff my mom liked. Mm-hmm. I can still play games that Jeremy liked, things like that. But if you can't, there's no reason to force it.
Yeah.
You know, why do that? Like, there's a lot of video games out there. Don't traumatize yourself.
Absolutely.
You know, and yeah, the only thing you can do, I think, to honor people's memory is, you know, get your cancer screenings, tell your people what you think about them and they matter, support each other, like do the things to prevent this from happening.
Yes.
That you can. So.
What's Abe say?
Abe says, thanks for agreeing to do the episode. Abe sponsored it. I also would have been interested to hear about Kay's experience with the game as somebody with a lot less playtime under her belt. But I think you two have made a good decision in allowing each other to tap out when one of you really doesn't have an interest in a given game or genre. It's also great to have these guest episodes that humanize Will. Good use of the verb. You've engaged in the pathetic fallacy, Abe. From the first time I fired it up, this was a podcast game for me. And so with 1,500 hours of playtime, I have never once had the volume unmuted. I ended up with a decent understanding of the story anyway, but thanks to you, I just learned that the cutscenes are narrated. I'm particularly interested in a new run so I can listen to Isaac's parents fighting about during the ascent, as well as the dad and Isaac talking about it during the post-beast cutscene. One quick question. Do you think Guppy Will's enjoyment of Tainted Lost Runs is just a product of his inherent nihilistic view of the world? Or does Smart Will also like Tainted Lost? I appreciate the concept behind the character, but getting all his marks was by far the most miserable part of my journey to get the Dead God achievement. I don't think it's separate from Will's smartness. This is an aspect that you have picked up on, a true aspect of Will that I think is agnostic to his intelligence, like Guppy Will. Like, he's not doing a bit. Will likes... No, I mean, I'm not joking. Like, I think...
No. It's just Will, funny. Yeah.
Yeah. Will likes really antagonistic game design. Mm-hmm. Challenge is very important to Will.
Yep.
In a game, like the... You know, and I'm not trying to tell tales out of school. This is what my impression from knowing him. Challenge and novelty are the biggest gaming values for Will. So something like Tainted Lost, which I find to be a fucking nightmare.
Can you give me a quick summary of what Tainted Lost is?
Yeah. So the regular Lost, you start out, you can fly, but you can only take one hit per room.
Okay.
If you get hit twice in a room, you die. You have an item that lets you tank one hit, but you basically die in one hit.
Okay.
Tainted Lost doesn't have that. He just dies in one hit. You get a item, like a consumable, that can let you tank a hit, and you're supposed to get better quality items, but that's pretty suspect.
Okay.
It's really hard. And the reason why I don't like it is because getting those completion marks, unlocking that shit, if you just had to play the game to the regular ending, that's mm-hmm. reasonable. But a bunch of Isaac is not a game where you can be reasonably expected to avoid all damage.
Yeah.
There's a lot of bullets in some of those end bosses and a lot of very unfair attacks. There's like telefragging and stuff that happens. I just don't like being set back that way for things that are not my fault.
Yeah.
You know, and I think Will doesn't mind it. It's smart Will, it's real Will mm-hmm. who has that feeling, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a nightmare to me. I'm with you. I have not unlocked all those things. I don't have that achievement. Mm-hmm. Tainted Lost and Jacob and Esau have fucking stalled out that desire in me. Now I just play it for fun.
Yeah. I mean, my thoughts about the game, I admire it. I've enjoyed time that I have, you know, the time that I spent with it. It's just a matter of the roguelike progression, you know, feeling like I'm on a treadmill feeling that is, that stops me from kind of engaging with it. I play other podcast forever games instead.
There's like kind of different mindsets of a run in a mm-hmm. game where it's like, have you had a complete gaming experience, like an arcade experience, or are you not making progress towards something?
Yeah.
You know, and then contrast that with the forever games that you generally play, which are like base and management things, which are like attending a terrarium or building like a big Lego set. You know, there's always progress. You've done a thing.
Yeah.
You know, and they're just different like gamer types who want it. Like when I sit down and play Isaac, the reason it's a forever game is because I feel like I get a complete experience, like a short story.
Yeah.
Basically when I play it, as opposed to like working on a project. Mm-hmm. You know, neither one is more virtuous than the other. It's just, I think that they're different desires.
Yes.
Yeah. Huh. What does Lucy say?
Lucy says, what a fun and only slightly guppy-ish episode about a great game. I think along those lines, I just wanted to put forward that maybe some of the reason that Isaac doesn't get as much discussion is that the game is so big and intricate that it works mostly in Gestalt. The wiki gets stuff wrong. There are so many items and interactions that cataloging them drove at least two podcasters to insanity. And that's even before you get to the conversations about the monsters and floors. No matter how many words are said about it, it really lives or dies in how it feels to play across 1,500 hours, which is a lot to distill into any kind of explanation. That said, you have certainly done some of the best saying about it. Best of the word saying about it. There we go. Okay. 1 out of 5 stars, and this has been a 5-star review.
Thank you, Lucy. Those stars are what matters. I mean, you're right. Like, it's huge.
Yeah.
And that's part of it. I just wanted to get flowers because I like it. I think it's really good.
Yeah. You know, it'd be weird not to talk about it on the show.
Yeah. Yep. I'm mildly partisan about it. Mm-hmm. I erased a response and I can't undo it, but luckily we're moving on to thief responses now.
Boop.
Craig says, hey, Duckfeed, been following the podcast since roughly the Metal Gear Solid episode in 2012. Haven't written in often, but I've waited for years for you guys to cover Thief 1 or 2. First played the game as an 11-year-old with a PC Gamer demo disc back in 1997. Love the first two games and have played through many times, but feel the Dark Engine really showing its age. Still, they have a surreal other time and place feel that has not often been bettered. Much love for 2026. Thanks, Craig.
I'm happy your patience was rewarded.
Yeah, me too. I love doing that. Like, it was, I'm really glad we scratched that off the list.
Yeah.
We've been doing this forever, but we have a lot of things like that that are like, you know, that's Lumen. We're going to mm-hmm. do that. You know, we're doing our first Mortal Kombat and Donkey Kong game this year.
Yeah.
We haven't done a Far Cry. We haven't done Far Cry 2, which is like a really important, interesting game.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of things like that. We haven't done a Jagged Alliance. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of stuff like that.
We have done Donkey Kong game, but not
you're right.
Country.
Yeah. 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 We didn't play as Donkey Kong.
Yeah.
Yeah. We played a Mario game
mm-hmm.
where you kill Donkey Kong
in front of Diddy.
Yeah. You get 10% against Donkey Kong infected enemies.
Donkey Kong. Oh, God. Taffin Tommy writes, this is my all-time favorite game. Every time I boot it up, I feel like I've gone home. I love the feeling of starting in a hostile and dangerous level, blackjacking everyone, and having the place to myself at the end. Until the guards wake up, this mansion is mine. I have to shout out the game's vast amount of fan-created content. If you love this game, you can sink hundreds of hours into fan missions without ever playing the same one twice. And there are some real gems in there. I'd rattle off some recommendations, but I doubt that Gary and Kay have the patience for that. If you're interested, you can find what you need online.
I don't have the time for it.
Yeah.
Like, that sounds really cool. I've read about the Black Parade and the remake of Thief 2.
There's seriously one called the Black fucking Parade?
There is one called the Black Parade, but it's supposed to be great.
Okay.
I know it's called the Black Parade. It may have predated.
Okay.
Like, it, you know, this is an old game, so it very well could have predated the song. Mm. They're supposed to be really good, and I'm interested in them. This is a game that is in my, like, pile of games that I could dedicate my life to.
Yeah.
If I wasn't playing other games for work, and mm-hmm. you know, this could be a thing that I spent a lot of time with.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very excited. And I also play the same way. Everybody's got to get donked.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Everybody
must get donked. That way. Everyone must be donked. Every fascist gets a concussion.
Yeah.
When I'm on the, I do this shit for the love of the game.
God, how good is Indiana Jones?
It's really good. It's funny. You know, we're going to talk about it a while for now, but the animation question made me think of that, because there's some animations in that I think are like, climbing is so fucking slow.
Yeah.
In any video game where I could do something better athletically than a character, I raise an eyebrow and I'm like, I could probably climb a ladder faster than this.
Yeah.
You know, it's also really funny that when you're in disguise, anything you do doesn't matter. So like, I'm like using my whip to grapple hook onto a desk that nuns are studying at. Uh-huh. And then like they land and go, "Bonjour, father." And I go, "I'll be with you." And then like go walk off their desk. Very funny.
Oh God.
Yeah. Drew says, "I'm really happy to hear that you're doing Thief 2, as it's probably in the higher end of my top 5 games of all time. I think what makes this game work so well is the focus on being a stealth game where you hide in the shadows. It's stating the obvious, I know, but I almost feel like modern games / players would find that approach too simple and expect more. What magic can you do? What type of combat should you include? Should there be city factions that you can influence through missions, etc.? I feel like developers / publishers are too wary of producing a game with such a tight focus, opting to overstuff them with content that either doesn't play well or make sense within the world. I love the Thief games, at least the first 3, because of that. Not necessary to read this out loud, but more for interest's sake, I really wanted to give the reboot a chance, so I was positive on it leading up to the release. Unfortunately, it's just not a very good game, partly because of the above issue, and it doesn't seem to know what type of game it wants to be. Is it stealth? Is it action? Is it a spy story? Is it a ghost story? We don't know. There are some things to recommend. Garrett's movement feels great, but otherwise, it's a game I think you both will resent having to finish after playing it for a few hours.
Okay.
Thanks for warning us off.
Yeah, good to hear.
Yeah. It's in the Deus Ex The Fall pile. As like something where it's like, it seems like as a completionist, I would eventually play this, but
yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I can actually, doing it will disavow me of that.
Yes. Yeah. Last Thief 2 response here. Ryan writes, Thief the Dark Project was the first true first-person game that I played, getting it in 1999 in a CD binder that we received from a family friend. As a sheltered 10-year-old who could not handle horror, I was not able to get past the second level that starts with a few zombies and had to have my dad beat anything too intense for me at that time. When Thief 2 came out, the transition to more human and mechanical enemies meant that obstacle was gone, and I devoured the game over and over on all difficulty levels throughout the year 2000. While certainly rough in some spots due to the unfortunate Super Crunch mode, the game's expansion of concepts from the first game and intricate levels completely transported me into the world of the city, and the writing of Karis and the Mechanus had a huge impact on me at the perfect time. Thanks to the power of nostalgia, I have not found any newer stealth games in this specific style to be nearly as enjoyable. So I go back to play both of the original Thief games every few years for some comfort burglary to escape our current metal age. P.S. The closest game coming out that looks to capture this style is Project Shadowglass, which is still very far out from the looks of it. So normal caveats on pre-alpha hype around a faux retro games are in place, but it's worth following if this scratches an itch.
Nice.
I just saw the Shadow Glass. I just saw that last night, actually, when I was looking through my Steam queue. So it's wishlisted. It looks neat, although I tend to, those faux retro pixelation filters tend to make me motion sick. So,
yeah. I would like the likes to happen. Yeah. Like, basically every out of style gameplay mode, I would like there to be really good throwbacks. I want a Lunacid for everything.
Yeah.
Like, pretty badly. Mm-hmm. So that does sound cool. If you, on the Thief Reddit, which I saw when I was researching for the episode, a lot of people have suggested games, mm-hmm. other games. And I don't know if Ryan's familiar with those, and I haven't checked them out personally because of time, but interested in those myself. And also the writing and the Karis and the Mechanist, like, that game having really good writing was a genuine surprise.
Yes. Yeah.
It never gets talked about for that, but it's got a good story and good writing.
Yeah.
Like, pretty good. And then finally, I closed the window on accident.
But you want me to read while I read this response I fix that?
Take that one while I take care of that.
All right. Corey, the person who executive produced the RoboCop episode, says, "Hey, Gary and Kay, I'm really looking forward to your coverage. Did you also think that Max Becker was very funny? There's a downtime moment in this game where you can press interact at him and he goes, 'Working hard or hardly, who gives a shit,' that made me spit water." If anyone on Tumblr played this game, he would be a baby girl. Thanks so much for the amazing shows. 20 smiley faces.
We both found the game funny in general. I think the episode is that drops tomorrow as we're recording this. I think that people will like it. I think it's a funny and fun episode.
Yes. And Becker was very funny.
Yeah. Becker's good. And thanks for sponsoring it. I would not have, even though having heard this is good, like, I wasn't going to race out to play our licensed RoboCop game. I'm really glad I did. Brought RoboCop back into my life.
It's like rediscovering Jesus.
Yeah, I'm a born-again RoboCop guy. Like, legitimately, like, it was super fun, and I love thinking about RoboCop now.
You know? Time.
I've been drawing him.
Sitting in a room thinking about RoboCop.
Yeah, have you drawn a RoboCop since then? Drew a little RoboCop helmet. It's pretty fun. Guy says, "I was so excited when I heard you were playing RoboCop. It's possibly my favorite film and almost perfectly symmetrical, but I bounced off the game many times before I got into it. Eventually, I realized that the open world city bit was basically interconnecting paths between dungeons. Each apartment, block, garage, steelworks, etc. was a dungeon that you had to get to and then RoboCop your way through. After that, it all clicked and I had a whale of a time. Plus, in the DLC, you get to control an ED-209 and fight other ED-209s in a diorama of Delta City, like a tiny kaiju battle." That's fucking sick.
I like that. I like the idea of that.
That makes me kind of want to play. I've heard mixed things about the DLC.
Yeah.
That's pretty fun.
No notes. I don't understand what "and is almost perfectly symmetrical" means.
Yeah. Favorite film is almost perfectly symmetrical. Yeah. I don't know.
Let's see. Oh, I just did a search for the How Long to Beat on RoboCop Unfinished Business. It's about 10 hours. I didn't realize there was a RoboCop game for the Xbox.
Okay.
For original Xbox.
Yeah. I wonder. I haven't heard anything about it, which makes me feel like it's probably not very good.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember seeing this cover working at GameStop, but
With this and Indiana Jones, we're eating good on adaptations that get the assignment.
Mm-hmm. Alex writes, "Welcome to my comment, Gary and Kay. I played through RoboCop Rogue City somewhat recently and found some striking similarities to it in another game recently covered on WoW, Fear. And of course, by striking similarities, I mean that both games have segments of walking through hallways while your vision gets glitchy and you hear a voice of a ghost child, spooky-tacular. In that aspect alone, it is exactly like Fear. My less sarcastic thoughts are that I found this game to be a bit of a slog, and not because Robo moves so slowly. I actually didn't realize that there was an entire weapon upgrade system. Until I was nearly done with the game, when I was desperately slamming my face on the I get it button. Oh yeah, if you're walking around with the base auto 9, you're going to have a bad time.
Yeah, and game does not tutorialize.
Nope.
Particularly well. Like, that it is... There's single A, double A energy to how it fubs that Shit. That sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would make everything 1,000 times slower. And yeah. It's logged even a little bit, you know, like near the end, it needed to end sooner than it did. I would have cut something from this game.
Yeah. It's also like Fear in that if you press a button, you go into slow motion.
Yeah. And it's probably because it's kind of a callback to shooters that, you know, that kind of style of shooter.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's a intentional throwback to that era of them. Thanks, everybody, for writing in. If you have responses to next month's games, which are Mortal Kombat 2, Mega Man X4, Indiana Jones, and The Great Circle, please write in by February 15th at duckfeed.tv/contact.
Yes.
Here's the thing I wanted to put in the world about that. Mortal Kombat 2 is going to be an episode, I feel, we haven't really talked about this, but I think it almost necessarily has to be largely about Mortal Kombat 2 as an idea.
Yeah.
You know, like the culture around it and like how it came out and cultural impact and stuff, a little bit about the series, because like talking about that actual game, I have not played a fighting game that does more input reading cheating than Mortal Kombat 2 in a really long time.
Yeah. It's a lot.
Yeah. Like it's real good multiplayer. You know, it's fun to play multiplayer. Playing against the computer though, it is not a good single player game.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed. Yeah. It's going to be a weird one.
I bought a Mortal Kombat book. To read. I'm hoping to read it and send it back just in time because I only want to read the chapter on Mortal Kombat 2. And I couldn't find it at the library.
If you have thoughts about March's games, you write in by March the 15th, and we're going to announce those now. March is opening up with a kind of obscure one, an indie game called The Final Station, and it's a DLC, The Only Traitor.
Yeah. Curious about that. Looks really cool. That is a patron sponsor from our friend Ivan. Looks real neat. So excited to bring some eyes to it. Yeah. After that, we're doing Donkey Kong Country 2. We mentioned before. Very important series we have not touched. We're going to touch it. And then for the premium that month, and we're doing shorties that month a lot because this is in the, you know, these games we'd be playing during the move zone.
Yeah. Yeah. We're going to be talking about Castlevania Bloodlines. That's a Gary pick.
Yeah, I'm really excited. I have a soft spot for Bloodlines. This is the Genesis game. And it's interesting to me because it is like a divergent evolution. Like, what is a Castlevania game like on this different ecosystem, this different system? It's weird. Sounds weird. That kind of music sounds real weird filtered through the Genesis sound chip.
Everything about it's kind of just kind of off.
Uncanny.
It's like this, yeah. It's a weird companion with Super Castlevania 4, which is also a weird Castlevania game.
Yeah, the 16-bit era for Castlevania is really strange.
Yeah,
and we're gonna kind of complete that suite.
Yeah,
Castlevania Bloodlines and Indiana Jones and the Great Circle are premium episodes, which means everybody gets the generalities, and then patrons get the entire episode. We're making some changes to our Patreon. Support us. You'll get those episodes. You get all the old ones. You'll get that RoboCop episode, which is a hoot. It's a really good value, and it helps us keep doing this. It's why we can keep doing it. It's getting K out of Ohio.
Yeah.
There's like a lot of reasons to support us right now. Yeah. We really appreciate it. We understand there's a global economic downturn. We understand.
Yeah.
So if you're able to help us, we really do appreciate it.
If you are helping us, this is something you can do. But if you cannot support us monetarily, you can go leave ratings or reviews, talk about us on message boards, leave comments on the episodes on Spotify. All of that is very welcome.
Yeah. Tell people about us. Tell your friends. You can also, if you are any kind of marginalized person and you have a project or product you'd like us to shout out, please send me an email, gary@duckfeed.tv, include all the information you think I might want, and we'd be happy to do so. And join us in thanking our producer, Gwen.
Thank you so much, Gwen.
Yeah, and we will see you next week with Mortal Kombat 2.